are very clear that they're not getting what they need, and we don't have to do the type of pushing. I will say, just to pick up of what Nora was saying, is self-regulated companies are unregulated companies. And while we are doing this advertiser campaign, while we are pushing from the outside, the technology that has so much potential to move us into the future is dragging us into the past. And that is not unfortunate like a car accident. That is unjust, and it's manufactured through a whole set of choices that our government has made about how companies are regulated. Make no mistake, our cars are not safe because of the benevolence of the auto industry. They are safe because of the infrastructure and accountability that surrounds it, because there are people that evaluate and hold accountable. And right now, whether it's the sort of algorithms that are not transparent, whether it's the business models decisions, whether it's these companies getting to decide what the standard is in terms of moderation, in terms of accountability, whether it's the fact that because of laws that exist, they have a level of immunity to liability. We need a new set of engagement from Congress and the White House, because we can't keep going to billionaires begging them to protect our civil rights.
Rashad Robinson, president of Color of Change, Nora Benavides with Free Press. We thank you both for being with us. A happy belated birthday to John Hamilton. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are tuned to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
This program is made possible by KBOO members and support from the League of Women Voters of Portland, providing nonpartisan election information at lwvpdx.org. The League of Women Voters has online voters' guides, videos, and podcasts to help voters understand the state and local candidates and measures that will be on the ballot this November. Nonpartisan voter information is at lwvpdx.org.
And this is More Talk Radio on your community radio station, KBOO 90.7 in Portland, 91.9 in Hood River, 104.3 in Corvallis, and via the World Wide Web. It is KBOO.fm. We are broadcasting on the 7th day of November, and the year is 2022, Common Era. I am Cecil Prescott, and I have the pleasure to share this platform this morning with my co-host, Celeste Carrish.
Good morning, Celeste Carrish. Yes.
How are you this morning? Do you adjust to the time change?
Kind of, yeah. I had other things to address. Yeah, but I enjoyed the fact that I didn't have to wake up so early, but I was totally thrown off by the fact it was bright and light outside.
Yes.
And so many folks are thinking that what we need to do is get rid of daylight savings time, though, because it wreaks havoc with our health. And I'm listening to Amy Goodman and company, and I'm reading these articles about various things, and I think, when do we as a group ever really seem to care about our health? Mm-hmm. It's funny because, you know, we have things like social media, which promotes negative societal dynamics, which cause bad mental health, or give vent to people who have violent mental health tendencies, you know. Some of us don't want to wear a seatbelt, but never mind that. That's not what we're here for today.
Well,
I'm wrong. I was just tickled when I heard that. That's all.
Okay. I thought we lost the last bit of your statement. You said you were tickled when you, and then we lost you.
Oh, I just said I was tickled when I heard some of the concerns that were voiced by the guest on Democracy Now, and not in a bad way and not in a condescending or patronizing way, just laughing at human foibles, human frailty, human foibles, and how in the midst of trying to enjoy yourself, we want to protect yourself. In the midst of trying to protect yourself, we still want to enjoy yourself. And so sometimes we seem to contradict the very desire in hand, you know.
Certainly we do. And that's related to among the topics we would like to talk this morning about. And I want to begin by just asking all of us, wherever we are, just to reflect for a few minutes and think of our morning routines. What is it like as you begin to, if you have the opportunity to sleep at night, what is your routine as you begin the day? As you wake, as you gather your thoughts, what are some things that you do? What are some patterns of your lifestyle? And think of waking up, getting up, continuing with your day. I don't want to fill in too many. I just want each person to think about their own day. And I say that because I want to confess that I thought was initially like resentment, I've sort of fallen into this routine, which is somewhat related to some of the topics that Democracy Now! Is addressing, this in terms of how dominated we are by social media, and particularly by those in control of social media, how that dominates our lives. So typically for me, you know, it's sort of like I wake up and I look at my phone and I start checking apps and messages. And, you know, it's so subtle, because I can remember years ago, Celeste, when I first saw someone with a mobile phone, and I thought, oh, that's ridiculous. And I know I resisted getting one for years, because I said, well, if somebody wants to talk to me, they can leave a message for me on my message machine and I can pick it up later. Well, you know, after a number of years, I, you know, said, okay, I will get a mobile phone. And for years, I proudly had a very simple phone, you know, one of those flip phones.
Yes.
That was not very smart, but which apparently, well, how they're being advertised now. But, you know, those old-fashioned, you know, flip phones or whatever, you know, those not smartphones. And then, I got into a habit and gradually began texting people. And then after years and years and people urging me, and people like yourself, Celeste, I must say, telling me to join the, you know, 20th or the 21st century, I said, okay, I finally got a smartphone. And then I noticed I became immersed, because not only checking the apps, checking to see who's awake, what's the latest poll numbers, and then the role of social media platforms in my life. So gradually I enrolled in the social media platforms, and, you know, I'm at that point now where I'd say, am I so dependent upon people like billionaires who spend money for these things, and how do we separate ourselves? And how has that impacted my lifestyle and how I relate to other people? So that's my confession. Celeste, can you, if not, give me some sort of resolution about how do I get out of this dilemma? Or am I in a dilemma?
Well, you are in a dilemma. Let's look at how it affects certain other elements of your life, such as your lifestyle. So I shared this article with Cecil about, and he actually had seen it, when, you know, too, separately. This young woman decided she wanted to post something about her luxurious morning ritual. She gets up, she has coffee, sits around for an hour or two with her husband in their lovely little backyard nook, and has a wonderful time listening to nature and everything. And everybody, well, not everybody, but a large amount of people took issue to that, saying, you know, she's indulging in conspicuous consumption, you know, where she's flaunting and flossing her good fortune in front of everybody, and that's awfully rude. Now, this is not new. I mean, I remember hearing, teasing friends about conspicuous consumption, and sometimes I still do, especially when their whole point is to just be seen. And this woman got a lot of hits, and I started reading that and thinking, why is everything on one extreme or another? Either they hated her, or, you know, they were happy, you know, and celebrating. And I'm thinking to myself, well, we do know that social media erodes some of the empathy that we have as society, you know, and because it is media, it makes sure that it sucks up enough of your attention so that it lingers around long enough to get you irritated, to put you in that mood. Then additionally, we have to remember, as you know, I keep saying, an angry person is easier to control, so they have algorithms to push all the stuff that's going to make you angry to the top to keep you in that controllable state. And it seems like it's working so well. And I guess that's one reason why I laughed when I heard some of the complaints from the people. Not that, again, like I said, they were righteous complaints, but it's like, why are we acting like they're going to do anything different? Twitter is private property. It's not a utility. You know, Twitter belongs to somebody. We're on in their yard, in their house. Why are we expecting them to give us something that's going to help society stay healthy? It is not likely. So once again, Cecil and I are in this position where, you know, we just want to kind of sound the alarm, get some discussion going, and talk about, you know, how to maintain that empathy in the face of social media and the way social media erodes our ability to even have empathy, which should be a human quality, you know.
It should be part of what makes us human. And certainly there have been much has been written and talked and reflected upon about the role of social media and how it has impacted human interactions. So as Celeste suggested, there has been an impact in terms of how we communicate, how we empathize, and how we relate to one another. Certainly, social media has made forming connection with people across the world easier and more doable than ever before. It's easy to connect with someone in another city, another state, another country, and have real conversations, live conversations with individuals. So social media has enabled us to connect with people in different ways. But has it impeded empathy? And Celeste suggested the one example of a woman who posted about her morning coffee routine with her partner, and how some people felt compelled to critique that person's posting. And so the question is, has social media made empathy more difficult? And what does that mean to our society? And doesn't mean only in terms of one woman and say, my gosh, why is she posting her garden and how she drinks coffee with her partner each morning? That's you know, selfish and all. But in terms of how it impacts our communication in terms of having political conversation with one another, with those who are deemed to be different, has it impeded, made it more difficult to have empathy? We suggest it has. And if that is the case, is there a way to get beyond that? Give us a call and let us know about you and your relationship with social media. Now, we want to hear primarily from people who use social media, not people who've said that, you know, I do not use social media, it's something I don't do, and that's fine and proper. But what about those of you who do use social media? How do you regulate it? Has it been a tool for you to become more empathetic, or has it impeded empathy? Our numbers are 503-231-8187. Social media versus empathy. Is it possible for us to relate to one another, and especially in this political season, how has social media been used by you, or has been helpful or hurtful to you? Our numbers are 503-231-8187. Give us a talk, and you don't have to give us your social media handle, but maybe your name, that will be fine. Celeste, do you have a prefer social media apps that you turn to? You mentioned Mr. Musk's Twitter.
Well, I rarely, I have a Twitter account. I rarely use it. I, like I said, for me, I get on social media rarely, every now and then, maybe once or twice a week. I'm really careful. One reason, because I have ADD. I'm not getting lost. Mm-hmm. One time I was on for almost 8 hours, yeah. Just, you know, answer stuff. And after that, I just realized this is dangerous for me. I can't do that, you right. know. And I have other reasons why I want to stay off. So I have a Twitter account. I have Instagram. I never use Instagram. I just, if I get an email or something, I'll look at whatever's in there that's embedded from Instagram. I don't tweet. I just use Facebook Messenger every now and then. And it's because of all these things. You know, when you are neuroverse, as they call it these days, mm-hmm. you have to recognize some of your traps, some of the traps that keep you from living a full life, a fuller life. And for me, social media is one. And it's odd because I spent most of my life involved in communications and jobs with communications, and to not use a tool of communication seems counterintuitive. But once you start recognizing some of the effects it can have, if you are susceptible, then you know you just got you got to try to make that healthy choice.
Right. No. Right. Well, you said if you're susceptible to these things, and earlier I think you were arguing that maybe we all are to some degree.
Well, you impacted. Know, I'm scared to generalize, but yeah. You know, that's what I wonder, because the human condition is, although we do have certain types of diversity, we're all human beings.
Yeah, and I was wondering, you know, I think maybe early today or in our conversation yesterday, you were reflecting upon the use of algorithms and how they impact what we see and the information we receive. You want to say anything specifically about that, Celeste?
Yes, I do. I'm going to reference this article. It's in Noema. NOEMA, and it's an essay on digital society, how online mobs act like flocks of birds. And there's a growing body of research, it says, suggesting that human behavior on social media is strikingly similar to collective behavior in nature. This article was written by Renee DiResta, and her name is spelled, okay, be sure. The name is spelled R-E-N-E-E. Last name is D-I-R-E-S-T-A, and it was written November 3rd, 2022. And it opens by describing murmuration, which is the hypnotic flight of birds when they're in this kind of indirect, shapeless movement in the sky. And if you've ever watched back in the early aughts, you could see these designs on a computer screen sometimes, where you had these things kind of moving around. And right now, the name of them escaped me, but it's a pattern. And what they say is that the behavior of human beings is shaped by that network, but it also shapes the network. So we only respond as we see the group in our bubble respond. And the odd thing about the birds is that they manage to stay in the flock. They don't totally disperse, but they manage to stay in the flock. Well, a lot of people maybe don't give it a whole lot of thought, but not only do people who study communication, but psychologists and sociologists, they study how we work together, and they use practices like collaborative filtering, for example, and they mix that with certain combinations of algorithms to give us information that is just like only seeing what the people right around you are doing. We get a curated feed. We get very specific information sent to our account depending upon what we want. And, you know, social media is, on one hand, an interesting and helpful, potentially helpful dynamic in that it does connect us socially, and it does feed us something. You know, I don't want to call it information or misinformation and generalize, but it feeds us something. But here's the problem with it. What they did is they took groups of people who were not likely to have connected with each other they connected these folks, and they created groups with dynamics like QAnon, where you have that suspicion fanned to inferno level. And you link people who might be anti-vaccine people, which is a cautionary dynamic and can be helpful depending on, you know, how trustworthy Big Pharma is. And then you mix it with people who believe perhaps in Pizzagate. And if you don't believe me, those of you who have social media and do any kind of online searches, next time look at the friend that you're being offered on some of the social media platforms. And I bet you'll be surprised that if you looked up, say, cars with Sirius radio in them, just to say something, okay, you might find that not only are you getting those ads more, but you will be asked to connect with people for whom that is an interest. Do you want to be a friend with Celeste here? Because she sure does like XYZ. And you're only 20 people removed from her. You two should be friends. And it connects us. And then you have these interesting pools of people who they're in a, what do you call it, echo chamber. You know, you just see those people right around you. You don't get enough fresh influence and input. So you start falling into groupthink.
I see. So how do we break beyond that groupthink, or do we want to break out of that groupthink, or do we want to exist like a flock of starlings? You know, they look beautiful, but if we can only see, I think that article you referred to mentions that, you know, one bird can only see, you know, seven other birds in part of what they're doing. And yet, we say that we are independent thinkers, but if the, you know, if our nearest neighbor moves to the left, do we move to the left or to the right? And, you know, we've seen things for years talking about the power of suggestion in terms of mass advertising. But I think there is something here that is different these days, in terms of the role of social media and the limit it places upon us. You know, we remember in our history book reading about the time in the late 19th century when there were mass concentration of power in certain markets, railroads or newspapers.
Robber barons.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And similarly, now we are experiencing that now, where a few, very few individuals have control over the information that we receive and the information we share. How do we break away from that? And as Celeste, you mentioned before, you know, I don't think we're very well versed in terms of constitutional law or what we expect our society to be. And that becomes evident when we talk about free speech, which is a mantra for lots of people. But the Constitution itself, when it talks about free speech, is talking about how the government cannot limit free speech. It doesn't say anything about individual corporations or individual newspapers. And if a certain corporation or individual owns a media platform, they have the right to publish or not publish what they want to see and hear. Well, what do you do when you have a private ownership of a media platform with hundreds of millions of people on it, controlled by one person?
That is the question. I want to kind of expand it in a couple of other ways too, so we can try to hit that sweet spot with the folks who want to comment on this, but it's not quite where they are. First, our phone number is 503-231-8187. And then you are listening to Your Community Connection, KBOO Portland, 90.7 here in the city, 91.9 at Hood River, in White Salmon, Washington, and Corvallis and Albany here in Salem. It's 104.3. And everywhere, it's on KBOO.fm, where you can hear us. Tell your friends far, flung, and wide to click and listen. We keep sounding the alarm, and it's kind of contradictory because we both use these other social media platforms to a degree. And we're also telling people don't use them too much, you know.
do as I say, not as I do.
No, you can do as I do, because like I said, I'm not on Facebook that much, you know. But that's a blessing that I'm able to be there where, because I blew it. Like I said, I was on for 8 hours straight. It's like, where did the day go? And but I want to talk about, you know, how we're seeing some breakdowns in connectivity with people, especially in regard to some of the things that hold society together, like empathy, you know, like being able to share. You know, and when I sent that article to Cecil, it's like I had an interesting title for it in the email. I sent it live, you know, because I was trying to figure out, how do we describe this? You know, was the woman who sent the article, was she complaining? Was she flossing a little bit too loudly, being conspicuous consumption? You know. Are we a little too thin-skinned where we're haters or sour grapes because we don't have it? That's nothing new. But it's the way that it inflamed and polarized so many people so quickly that I found interesting. You know that somewhere of our family members or associates, they have less than we do. And so we want to try to be respectful of the fact. But the second thing, though, is...
Can you hold on? Hold on to that, yeah. Celeste. We have two callers. So.
Yeah, let's get to our first caller. Robbie, good morning.
Good morning. I wanted to bring up... I'm not for Elon Musk. I'm definitely against it. But what I found interesting was The Intercept published the fact that the Department of Homeland Security was meeting with these social media firms to target what they called disinformation, specifically around COVID-19, the Ukraine war, the Afghanistan withdrawal, a number of things. And I'm just concerned that the very notion that, you know, oh yeah, let's try to control it, kind of leads exactly to where we are right now, where, you know, we don't have a free media. I mean, look at the Nord Stream 2 pipeline, not to change gears, but that's now being blown under the rug because we have a controlled media. And so I don't really look at the problem as though, you know, another media millionaire guy got it, right? One second.
Do, 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 do.
Hello? Robbie?
Robbie, I think he had a call. So let's go to Sherry. Maybe Robbie can call us back. Sherry, good morning.
Good morning to both of you. I want to say first, thank you for having this discussion. I am pleasantly surprised at the level of knowledge that you two are expressing, especially Celeste. You have a very, very solid foundational knowledge of what social media is and how people consume it. I am actually a 10-year veteran social media manager. I own a digital management company, and I am actually employed at a local business running their social media and their I do website stuff for them and everything.
Mm-hmm.
What I've said for years, and I've been doing this a long time, like 2008 is when I started, is that the people are trying to blame Mark Zuckerberg, and he has plenty of places for blame. They're trying to blame the founders of Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, whomever, for the ills of people with lack of responsibility. Mm. Celeste, you are spot on with how the algorithms work. What people don't understand is we, Celeste, Sherry, Mark Zuckerberg, Tim Dorsey, whomever, has the ability to frame our own reality in that space. Those algorithms work based on the content we interact with. We have the choice of content we wish to interact with. As far as group speak goes, the original question was the lack or promotion of empathy. Honestly, I believe social media has shown how empathetic apathetic most United States population is, right? There's few people who actually foundationally, pyramidally have any empathy. Social media is just the exposure display of apathy, right? Would you agree?
Frighteningly, I would mostly agree. You know, and that's the frightening thing about it. We do have to be taught empathy, because as an organism, human beings are selfish, you know, and that's who we are. We have to be taught to care. So if we have something that's programming us not to care, that's what we
but
do.
But is
we
it?
Have to fight
is
against.
It programming not to care, or is it exposing the fact that we don't?
Mm. Why
that's,
can't it be both?
That's where I'm going, because you can get into 10 different groups with 10 different themes, 10 different philosophies, and take a piece of each of those that are a part of you and spread that across channels. If you're an empathetic person, you're going to get involved in people's missions. You're going to help fundraise. You're going to support child and animal causes. If you're apathetic, you're just out there to party and do whatever, and those groups are going to be your conspiracy theory groups. They're going to be the groups that are, you know, models, or the people who are very superficial.
Yes, yes. But I think it's both. I think it's both the dynamic you pointed out, the dynamic that I pointed out, and probably a couple of more, you know, that we just don't have the time to articulate. Because this is a dense situation. People with lots of advanced degrees who study human nature and the human mind and all this, they constructed this network, this infrastructure that we live in. And so, you know, what you said in terms of changing up your algorithm, how you search for information, you can be in this network, this infrastructure, we'll call it a building, but if you can't run to a window in this building and get some fresh air or see something different because the building does not have windows, then you're stuck in a prison. And that's, you know,
isn't our ability to log off our window?
But see, that's the thing. We are being conditioned every time we're on to want more likes, to stay on just a little longer, to go just a little further down this particular path to see how it's going to resolve itself. And it makes us stay on longer than we want to. It's kind of like science.
Or is that our lack of discipline?
Huh?
Is that our lack of discipline and lack of self-awareness?
It's both.
Lack of wanting to take responsibility for our actions.
Oh, I'm all about that. But I think sometimes we got to be careful because it's a combination, you know. Like I said, I try to stay off because I know I am susceptible. So I can only do a little bit. And God help me on those days when I'm not getting off and I'm ignoring those cues to say, get off, you know. But that's the thing. If we can be programmed to indulge in anything too much, we can be programmed to even ignore our self-protective cues.
Well, you know, and one thing, the reason why I got into what I do with digital marketing across multiple platforms, website development, copywriting and communications and the more vast arena, is because I was on it all the time. If I'm going to be on it all the time, I might as well make money doing it. So, because I have ADHD too, and so I have to be really, really careful. Like when I go on to post for clients or to, you know, give some advice or whatever, I have to physically tell myself, you are just doing this, and sometimes I'm even dad and go on further. But you have to, you know, have that initiative in mind.
Well, I think we're both on to something, and we, you know, we need to add some fresh mixture But because of that and because of the time, I want to also thank you for your call and move on to our next caller. But thank you for bringing up those points. I appreciate your call.
Thanks, Celeste. Thank you, guys.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye. Yes. Let's go to Molly next.
Good morning, Molly.
Good morning, Cecil. Good morning, Celeste. I almost feel like I know you both because I listen to your show and I call in quite often and love your show, and I love this format of social media where I can be part of it, too, in a more personal way than, say, Facebook. But I would like to start with Cecil's first entry into the discussion today, which was, what is your habit in the morning when you wake up? How do you get up? Do you just turn on your phone and look at an app, or get on some social media, check Facebook right away? So, we're in a very new, strange, brave new world, scary new world, the election coming up and everything. But in the morning is a time when the inner voice is the strongest, simply because you've woken up from sleep, maybe dreams that you don't remember, but that inner voice is very strong in the morning. At least I'm speaking for myself, and that's the only person that I can speak for. So, and when we've had discussions, you've had discussions about education, and I've chimed in, critical thinking is so important, and I think critical thinking comes, ultimately from that inner voice. I'll go to a word that you used in the last discussions, left. We are organisms. We are living organisms, and so all this stuff online, and it's definitely been made much worse by the pandemic, where we were forced into that, and children not in school, and so not having that social contact and having to turn to everything online. We don't even know the result of this great experiment that we're in, and the experiment is also the COVID and that's still continuing and that we still have to live with in our different ways that we do. But back to just that inner voice, and without that, all the social media can run rampage over you. All the brainwashing techniques go straight into you. You have to have a barrier where you only trust yourself. For me, I have an inner voice, and I put everything up against that. I don't trust anything except my inner voice, really. So that, I think, needs to be developed with definitely this newest generation. Mm-hmm. I've seen high school kids that pretty much interact, and this is before the pandemic, on their phones, but these are still people that they know, and I don't interact on a social media with anyone that I don't personally know, although I have to say I haven't seen many of these people in person the last almost 3 years now. Sure. But I'll just finish by saying, being organisms and having a brain and a heart and a soul, whatever that is, but I believe in evolution. In our distant evolution, we were in the same family as the octopus. The octopus's brain goes into all its 8 tentacles, and it actually has 4 hearts. And so the brain is more than a brain or a heart. It's a gut feeling for me, and it's very humanly. It's an organism, as you said so beautifully, Celeste, that reacts to other human organisms and, other animals like dogs or cats or wild animals, too. But that's enough. I want to give other people a chance to talk, but I love your show. It always gets me thinking, and thank you for everything you say.
Before you go, I wanted to ask you a question. You talked about the inner voice and how, thank you for sharing how early in the morning that's a time when it's possible to hear it. And it's part of routine, whether it's meditation or mindfulness. Do you have any thoughts about the research and the encouragement of in schools and in other places where children and youth are taught about mindfulness and meditation? Is that helpful?
Well, yeah, and I think really to take the less modern names off of it and just reading, writing, being able to speak your voice, I also write one page each day. It's just part of it, which is a form of thinking where I write down something that just rises to the surface first thing, and just little things about my life, nothing important to anyone, but maybe important to me. And it gives you a chance to not only think of what's happening to me, but others, and that empathetic, the last caller and us were talking about empathy as a form of. I recently saw a film on Netflix, so I wouldn't recommend it to anyone but the brave in heart, because it's brutal, and it's a first film by a South African man, a black South African man. He dedicated it to his father. It's called The Wind. The Wind. Let me get this right. It's a Nina Simone song, yeah. And other songs that run.
Wild
is the Wind. And what struck me about that, and I'm changing the subject here, so I better get off, is what it would be like to be in your own country instead of this country, for instance, and have that racist dilemma. And with elections coming up, I just want to say Obama, who I love so deeply, and I was so thrilled, he did, without meaning to, create a reaction. And I'm hoping that Michael Moore is right about the blue wave coming, because the red wave scares me. I'll just get off now, because the election's tomorrow, one election. I thank you both. Love you both.
Thank you so much,
thank
Molly.
Thank you so much for your call.
And you're listening to More Talk Radio here with Celeste, and I am Cecil. We're speaking this morning a little bit about the impact of social media. What does it mean to be empathetic? What are ways in which we can lean into one another and build community? Our number is 503-231-8187. Celeste.
You were asking me one way that I kind of try to lean into each other. I like how you said that, because it evoked both Bill Withers would lean on me and all other expressions. But here's one thing, is I still try to stick to the tried and true old school ways of doing some things. Like, I love to talk on the telephone. Part of my nursing background has made me aware that we do change each other. Quantum science dictates that there are things happening on smaller levels, and maybe even on other levels that we are yet to discover. But when you hear a person's voice, and it's as close to normal, natural timbre and tone, et cetera, as possible, it causes a biochemical change in your body. And it creates a positive sensation based on your associations with that person, or just their energy, or it can create a negative one. But the thing is it does create a change. And just as we feel that radiating our food in a microwave changes some of its qualities on a certain level, so does hearing mechanized voice changes, and not necessarily give us those beneficial changes. It can't, because it's not an organic happening.
So let me ask you. So Celeste, okay, before we go to our next caller, you said you're old school and you still like talking to people, and you gave this explanation about the importance of the human voice. So are you?
Yes.
Are old school, but are you modern enough? Do you prefer talking on the phone, or do you? Is it better to have a physical picture of the person? So do you FaceTime? Do you prefer FaceTime, or do you prefer talking by phone? I think this is also a generational thing. I think younger folks are more often to do FaceTime when they actually want to have a human conversation, rather than just the phone.
I prefer FaceTime because I have a sister in another state, and we FaceTime all the time because I like to look at the person.
Okay.
You know, and that changes things too. But we don't. Let's go to our next caller rather than taking up the time.
Okay. Yeah, Gordon is on the line. Good morning.
Hi.
Gordon.
Good morning.
Good morning, Gordon.
So, I believe the breakdown in our society is from the sociopathic, schizophrenic entity that shoves media through the television. And that's what's been brainwashing and creating society as we know it today, as a racist, sociopathic, schizophrenic society. And that's what we're dealing with, that's penetrated and inundated with chemicals that are affecting the neurosystem of our bodies, and we are being affected on a daily basis. So lack of empathy, narcissism, I mean, it's rampant because that's what's in a schizophrenic, sociopathic person. So the last thing I want to say is, in order to combat this stuff, we need to, in schools, in the earliest days that we can, we need to have mandatory cognitive intervention and dialectical behavior therapy in order to help these people live in reality and not in their emotional body.
Okay, and you lost me. You have to make it plain.
I'm kind of out.
You have to make it plain for me. I have no, I don't understand what you're talking about.
I understand what he's saying. Okay, thanks for your call. I understand what he's saying, but I have issues with that because that assumes that dialectical conditioning, that cognitive behavior training is totally pristine, separate, and apart from things like institutional racism, bigotry, and prejudice. They are not. They are tools that were constructed by human beings so they can be inerrantly applied, or they can be errantly complied. What I mean by that, they can be applied for bad uses, for bad results, or they can be applied for good uses and good results. Now, as long as I'm not so keen, I mean, I would question having certain people try to do this behavioral conditioning on my child.
Okay.
And I'm sure most people would too.
Okay, I have no understanding what the two of you are talking about. Let's go to our next caller. Good morning, Joan.
Good morning. This is a wonderful conversation, and I'm a Luddite, so I was pretty much going to stay out of it. But there's something that occurred to me when you were talking about the birds and the last caller mentioning stuff, which is that just like there's air pollution and water pollution, I have experienced myself that there is such a thing as electronic pollution. We are bombarded by electromagnetic energy. And I believe as human beings, when you talk about energy, that we are energetically connected with each other in ways that we do not yet completely understand. And it has to do with, I don't want to get too woo-woo about this, but there are people who can perceive things and energy, you know, such as in energetic healing forms, where you can feel the energies of people and use this for healing. You can use it for martial arts and so on and so forth. There is chi. There are other things that people are looking at scientifically now, but which we do not completely understand, which I feel could be interfering with the normal way, a normal but maybe subconscious way, that we actually do connect with each other. And someone who was speaking on the radio was saying a wonderful thing, that sound is actually touch at a distance, which is why when we hear music, we respond to it with our bodies, which is why when we hear someone's voice, we can be either pleasantly or unpleasantly affected, and where certain types of music either put us into ecstasy or make us want to start screaming, because sound affects us. And in the same way, electromagnetism and so on affects us. And a lot of the stuff that's out there, which is projecting things that some of us can feel and some of us can't. And I happen to be a canary in the spectrum, in this magnetic or electronic minefield. So I can feel some of this stuff in my body. This may be affecting people in ways that we don't understand, and there is something going on which we could think of as a kind of mass mental illness, but I don't think it's completely related to that, because of when you look at fascism, there was something going on there too. It was sort of like a mass psychosis that was happening. So the analogy with the birds and the other animals is excellent, I think, because we are animals and we do exist on the earth just like they do, just like the bats and the turtles can, you know, navigate long distances. We still don't know how it's done, but it's clear that the electromagnetic pollution that's out there is affecting us in ways that we do not understand.
Thank you so much for that.
Yes.
I just wanted to make that point.
Yes, thank you. Part of what I learned both in nursing, I like to call myself cross-educated, as I was blessed to have some interesting ways of learning stuff. But in nursing, that is one of the things I remember is being cognizant, being aware of the tone of your voice, of the touch of your hands, because those were instruments of healing. And you had to be very intentional about how you approached a person if you wanted them to be in an optimal healing state. Now, people do act in murmuration. There's deliberate murmuration and there's indeliberate. Watch somebody when, was that the 70s or 80s where we had the wave in the stadiums and people would do those waves, they'd stand up and throw their arms up and then burn them down upside down. And you would watch it go around and around and around the stadium a few times. We do that both deliberately, intentionally, but it was also comforting to us, which reflects on how we also do it unconsciously. And so back in the day, before we had social media, people who studied communication knew how to get that kind of a response from people. They used their voices. They used their ability to emote. So when you look at some of these speakers, both infamous and good, look at how they address, listen to how they address. That's how they were able to captivate people without the amplification of social media. And, you know, one of the reasons this keeps coming back to me and why Cecil and I keep having it is because we want people to really kind of wake up and look at how this thing, this dynamic is affecting how we communicate. It's not necessarily just about the content. It's the way the content is manipulated. It's the way the structure is built. And I use a house as an analogy. These social media platforms are like houses with no windows. If you go to an opening in the wall, it's really a TV screen. And it's putting a curated message into your mind. You might think you're looking out the window, but if you're not really looking out the window, somebody is picking all the content that's going into your mind. And that's the challenge. That's the challenge. Mm-hmm. What were you getting ready to say, Steve? I know we're almost out of time.
No, I'm not. I think this has been a very good conversation in terms of the challenge. And I was thinking about how we are like, you know, like the flight of starlings, and it can be so magnificent to watch, but as we watch, I think it's important to be able to think about, well, what direction are we going, where are we headed, and I'm not sure if we are one of the starlings in the midst of this flight we're able to see. Maybe we just go along with the flight, and it may be beautiful to watch, but it may be dangerous because of what it's creating. So how do we affirm individualism, but also the necessity to work in community?
How do we affirm being human? I think one of the best things to do is to turn off the social media every now and then. Limit how much you're in there. You have to get a big picture view, which you do not get when you're in the middle of the block. You have to sometimes separate yourself, maybe spend a little extra time with your own voice in the morning, you know, or at some point of the day. You have to kind of climb up on that metaphorical hill and get that broad view. You know, you got to look out that metaphorical window, which means turning off that technology for a hot minute.
Well, certainly, as our caller reminded us, I think it was so important, early in the morning or whenever you rise, there's that point where you are between two worlds. And it's at that moment, where that intersection of realities, where you are able, just for a second, to be able to be in that midst. So I want to encourage us to practice, to listen, to hear that inner voice, and go from there.
That's a start. You know, learn to hear your inner voice, learn to calibrate it so it's not afraid of everything, and learn to reconnect with human beings, because as everyone says, there's a lot of pollution out there, and you want to try to keep at least your inner sanctum, yourself, as clear and pure as possible, so that you can be that good person you want to be. You can be that powerful person you want to be. Now, I know we talked a lot about media.
We're running out of time.
Support KBOO. Support your community connection, KBOO. This is 90.7 here in the city, 91.9 in the Gorge, 104.3 in the Valley, everywhere, KBOO.FM. This has been More Talk Radio on your community connection, KBOO, Portland. We'll hear you next week.
Listening to KBOO Portland.
Hello, dear listeners. Oil for Kisses is a monthly program on KBOO 90.7 FM Portland that highlights the headier and weirder sides of underground metal, post-punk, DIY.